Okay, our next presenter is Dr. Robert McKitch. He completed this work at Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, Canada, and now he's taken a position at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, and we'll be hearing about Dr. McKitch's work.
Well, good morning. Thank you for that introduction. What I'm going to talk about today is a portion of the results that came out of my doctoral work. And thankfully, we're quite a few hours before lunch because obviously some of the materials I was dealing with are not exactly pleasant in that sense. So what I'm going to talk about today is the movement, the transport of bacterial pathogens out of slaughterhouse residual biopiles. Obviously, mortalities, waste management is a necessary topic that we need to consider in agriculture. One, because livestock mortalities are inevitable, and they're often a forgotten aspect of farming practices. As well, when we talk about manure applications to land, different processes like that, it becomes a very major issue. The problem with these types of waste, whether or not it's a slaughterhouse residual, a carcass, manure, is that they represent very large sources of pathogens, viruses, TSE diseases, that sort of thing. And I highlight a couple examples. The contamination of drinking water in Walkerton, Ontario about 9 years ago, and also the big mad cow disease crisis that has sort of gripped North America and many parts of the world for the last decade. When we move on and we consider the disposal methods that we have for getting rid of these wastes, many of them, like rendering, freezing and shipping them to certain spots, burying them, landfilling them, dumping them over the back hill for the scavengers to get at. The second point I mentioned here, a dead stock pickup program, especially when we're considering carcasses, these are very unsustainable methods, and they're not widespread, and they're usually quite costly. So this raises the stature of this issue that we need to talk about. And obviously, when we're looking for a proper method of disposal, we need something that's quick, cost-effective, and definitely safe. So an alternative method is constructing and using something called biopiling. Biopiling is essentially the same as composting. We use a couple phases in the sense of biopiling, the active phase that's dormant for at least 2 months, so at least 60 days. In the secondary phase, once we turn a pile, we're looking for stabilization of the materials, decreased degradation of bone, and that type of material. Guidelines are pretty standard for compost. We're looking for a temperature to be achieved and maintained for a certain period of time to ensure good pathogen degradation. And then, of course, we're looking for proper carbon-nitrogen ratios, proper moisture, and that sort of thing. The only difference, and the reason that the term biopiling has been coined, is that these piles with especially a carcass or slaughterhouse residuals are not turned for a minimum of 2 months. And in the research that I'm going to show you in many of the graphs, we didn't turn the piles for a period of 4 months. So the problem is that bacterial pathogen transport, and just focusing just on bacterial pathogens, in moving water, in surface runoff, percolating water, that sort of thing, is the greatest source and the greatest risk of these pathogens to affect human health and animal health in the environment. So one of the objectives of my work was to try to quantify the movement of these bacterial pathogens, both in liquid exiting the biopiles or their movement into the actual solid materials and solid zones of the biopiles during primarily the active phase of this concept that we call biopiling. And I do have the one star up there for the pathogens. In order to try to quantify, we used mainly five indicator bacteria, the family Enterobacteriaceae, standard ones, standard water quality parameters, like total coliforms, E. coli, Streptococcus faecalis. And then we also used a tracer E. coli bacterium. And we call this NAR because it was nalidixic acid resistant. So in order to actually conduct these trials and try to quantify the movement of these pathogens, we needed a facility that both represented and mimicked what would happen in a natural environment, but at the same time was totally biosecure and something that could contain everything so that we could properly dispose of it after the fact. So for this work, which was conducted in Bible Hill, Nova Scotia, we essentially constructed three cells, and I'll show you a bigger picture of them in a minute. Essentially, three little tiny swimming pools. That's another way to think of it. They were obviously replicated. They had full leachate and runoff control, and that's what some of these lower pictures are. There was a central drain right in the middle, and all of the different surfaces and corners or spots where we might get leakage or anything like that was sealed with either tape or different types of materials to ensure that there was no loss whatsoever of especially any of the liquids that would be exiting these biopiles. In order to take an extra step to ensure the biosecurity, obviously the site was out of sight and that sort of thing, but to move on and make sure that we had something that mimicked the natural environment, in the bottom of the cell, before the piles were built, we actually put in a soil profile. So we did try to mimic what would happen on a farm, or something like that. And this is just a blown up picture. You can see we had bulkheads on the front so that we could take those off and get in and access the materials and move things out and that sort of thing. But this was the concept we went with. So once the piles were built and they were functioning and all the wastes were in, in real time we had different measurements that were being taken, such as soil and biopile temperature, soil moisture content, different things like that. Mainly at the start and the finish, in a couple occasions partway through, we sampled the actual biopile and soil media and the effluent over time, quite frequently, for various quality parameters, obviously volume reductions for the solids or the amount of liquid actually leaving these piles. But mainly, and what I'll focus on, is the actual bacterial pathogens that were coming out of these piles or staying within the media. And just some other basic observations we included as well. So the general results from what we found from trying to use essentially a compost pile to get rid of these types of waste and that sort of thing was that we found very good volume reductions, upwards of 85% from initial volumes. We had very little vermin around, scavengers, anything like that. For instance, in the top of the cells, quite frequently I would have crows or ravens sitting right on top of the piles with this huge food source in front of them, but they couldn't see anything, which was kind of interesting. And I wanted to point out that at the end of it, and this is primarily after just the first stage, so after the first turning, the final product was very, very good. It was sweet smelling, had very good quality parameters. It was an orange-brown sort of color. And there were only little bits of hair and some thick pieces of bone, like the head of a cow or something like that. When we look at the actual bacterial pathogens, you'll notice I've started to use some acronyms. What we found, especially from the effluent data and from monitoring it over time, over several years, we found that the members of the family Enterobacteriaceae, which includes the total coliforms and E. coli, they reacted very, very similarly in many, many parameters that we measured. They, especially over time, in response to biopile temperature, and especially in response to soil moisture. What we did find, which was interesting, was that Streptococcus faecalis, which is a competing bacteria to the family Enterobacteriaceae, one is gram-negative, one is gram-positive, we found that in all of these parameters that we measured, it behaved differently, almost opposite to what we would expect. And this led us to the conclusion, or the assumption and speculation, because it wasn't necessarily an objective of research, that the standard use of ratios, such as fecal coliform and fecal streptococci ratios that are used to predict water quality and that sort of thing, were all thrown out. We had no faith in this whatsoever. When we considered the actual soil material from start to finish over the course of a trial, we found very, very little change in the levels of Enterobacteriaceae and the total coliforms. And from start to finish, there was no presence of E. coli or Streptococcus faecalis, which are technically the pathogens that are more inherent in the guts of warm-blooded mammals. When we considered the actual slaughterhouse residual source, right at the very start, what was coming out of those pails had very, very high levels of all of these types of bacteria that we were looking for, extremely high levels. And yet, at the end, there was nothing in the soil. So nothing had migrated into the soil, which was something that we were quite happy about. And as well, in the biopile media, after 4 months or later, we found lower levels, but still high levels of a lot of these bacteria, especially the total coliforms in the Enterobacteriaceae. But the significance of this was that it was contained within the biopile media. And at the same time, the Enterobacteriaceae and the total coliforms are common in the environment, common in soil, so it wasn't really that much of a concern. In the sense, we found at the end, no E. coli remained actually in this biopiled media, which was a nice outcome. When we started to look a little bit closer at the effluent data that we were receiving and collecting, we found that the annual loads over the course of a year from what started in the actual slaughterhouse residuals to what was being found in the actual effluent was less than 0.01% of these initial levels. So we found very, very good eradication, I guess you could say, of the pathogens in the moving water. But at the same time, most of them remained within the biopile media, which was again, a nice finding. And again, I'll go over a little bit more clearly in the next few slides. When we talk more about the effluent, we definitely saw lower levels of these bacterial pathogens over time. We didn't see full eradication in the water. We did have some lower levels even at the very end. So this led us to the idea that we need secondary methods to take care of these piles or this media at the end, which I won't go into anymore. But what we also did find was that definitely after precipitation events, we found a leg effect. So precipitation played a major role in the actual movement of these pathogens coming out of the biopiles. So again, what we can see here is we saw a good reduction. In many cases, we saw an exponential reduction in the bacteria. The red dots you see here are total coliforms. The blue dots are E. coli. And the dotted line is where we turn the pile. So anything to the left is the active phase of the actual biopiling experiment. Now, a couple things that jump out. If we look just at the outside, we see definitely the proper example of an exponential decay. But we have these two peaks here, and they are explainable because we inoculated with the E. coli NAR tracer bacteria at those times, and the NAR showed up as part of both of these tests. So we could take all of those points out, and we would see a very classic exponential decay, especially from high levels. When we're considering 80,000 of these pathogens in just 100 milliliters of water. When we start to consider the second phase, we can talk about some other aspects, such as the addition of air just by turning, the redistribution of nutrients, the fact that a lot of these pathogens are facultatively anaerobic. So what we see is we see, again, something that resembles a decrease, not quite exponential, but obviously, you know, still fairly high levels to begin as things get moved around, but by the very end, we're having very, very low levels. Now, I mentioned already we had to disregard the use of bacterial ratios in any way to make predictions or try to understand what's going on. And this was one of the main reasons why. This is still the same experiment from the graphs I just showed, only in this sense, this is Streptococcus faecalis, which acted opposite or behaved opposite to all of the other Enterobacteriaceae pathogens that we looked at. What we found was that, obviously, right at the start, because we had these fresh slaughterhouse residuals, we saw some higher levels in some quantity. But for the first 3 months, we found zero or extremely low levels in the effluent. So that's what this graph is explaining, is what was being contained in the effluent. And yet after all of the other bacterial pathogens had decreased and were down to very low levels, we started to see this upward spike, which if we were to hazard to guess, it would be an exponential increase in the bacteria. So we speculated many things, persistence, viable but not culturable state for the first 3 months, and talked about different things to explain why this might have happened. Obviously, the very top one was regrowth, but this wasn't a dedicated objective of this research, so we didn't harp on it too much, I guess you could say. I mentioned precipitation, along with the notion that what was contained in the effluent over time was less than 0.1% of what actually went into the biopiles. What we also found was that the actual movement of these bacterial pathogens that were in the effluent happened at very discrete times. And if you look at these graphs, if you can see the red line, this is the cumulative precipitation over time during the active phase of the experiment. And what you can see with these black lines, which they just indicate different cells, there are very distinct events where I've pointed out arrows, where we see these huge jumps in the actual levels. So we were able to conclude that precipitation had a major role, and we looked at that further in some other research. So again, just to summarize, precipitation events, preferential flow was another idea that we tossed around, were very, very prominent players in this research and the findings that we had. Obviously, we had very low levels in the effluent, and we found that most of the bacterial pathogens, if there were any, were being retained within the compost or the biopile matrix, and further decay was taking place. The levels in the effluent definitely decreased quite rapidly over time, but they were never totally eradicated. We always did have a little bit left, even after 4 months of this type of decomposition. The idea of bacterial ratios, we threw it out. And I added in this one last little bit here. When we compared it to a lot of typical quality parameters that we look for in water or media, we found clear across the board, pretty well no correlation to anything. There was no trend, nothing that could pull out, that we could pull out to really talk about. And obviously, regrowth, I mentioned that again at the end, because I think this is a very good next step in where some of this research can go. So if anyone wants to take it up, I'd be happy to talk. So thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. In reality, obviously, in a typical farm where they don't have any type of structure or anything, just in a field, it would go straight into the soil, or it would run off the surface if it's not done properly and go to a pond or go wherever, or go to groundwater. For a lot of research-based applications like this, or even for some commercial composting applications, a lot of times the effluent will be directed to a location, and it might go through tipping buckets or it might go to a sewer, but from my knowledge, from everything I've read and looked for, nothing has ever been, let's say, foolproof. Nothing's been secured in the sense that this was. And with the nature of the materials we were using, and I should add, we were hoping to get into a little bit of work with prions and that sort of thing. So we wanted to make sure that we had the utmost secure facility we could. This was unique in that sense, where all of the effluent was directed or had to migrate to this one central drain. There was only the one spot where it could exit. We could then quantify it over time, sample it, and then right after that, it went straight into a local sewer. Okay.